This is the American Ag Network Week in Review. In the show today, Rusty Halverson gets us caught up on the week's top news.
President Donald Trump will be heading to the 100th meeting of the American Farm Bureau Federation in New Orleans this coming week. The president spoke at last year's event in Nashville, Tennessee, to a very friendly audience.
You know that our nation's farmers are just the most incredible people, and we are doing a job for you. You're seeing it like nobody else. Regulation, death tax, so much. You're a big beneficiary, and you're really producing like nobody else. So I just want to thank you for that. And that's why I'm so honored to be the first president to address the American Farm Bureau in more than 25 years. What happened? Where are they? What happened? What happened? Where are they? And you know, this is your 99th year. So I was very disappointed to hear that. You understand. 100 is so much cooler, I have to be honest. So I'll be back, I think, next year. I'll come back. All right? We'll come back.
Scott Vanderwall, president of the South Dakota Farm Bureau and vice president of the American Farm Bureau, says it will really cap off the centennial event for the group. Outside of the president's visit, AFBF's program shows multiple breakout sessions. Our very own Sabrina Hill, farm broadcaster and digital media director for the American Ag Network, is a featured speaker on Monday's agenda at the American Farm Bureau's convention, along with farm broadcaster Brian Winnikins. They'll talk to farmers about what to do if you see fake news in the local media. I asked Sabrina what they've got in store.
Well, there's a term that I think President Trump has really coined lately, and that term being fake news. We really live in a fake news society, and that's what my workshop is based on, how to present the real news of agriculture when we live in a fake news society. So we're going to be talking about how to separate out misleading information or information that is simply wrong versus what we know to be true about agriculture so that consumers can get the right information about what farmers do.
Sabrina likes to remind producers that they are the experts.
I like to tell farmers they're the expert, and they need to keep that in mind. They're the expert. I'm the reporter. I'm not a farmer, but I do my best to get accurate information from farmers to other farmers so that they have information they need, but also so that consumers have good, solid, sound facts to base their buying decisions on.
Before joining the American Ag Network, Sabrina had several decades of experience working in print, radio, and TV in the California agricultural community, and she knows the challenges of getting the proper message out.
You know, because you and I talk a lot, obviously, that California is a leading agriculture state in the nation. California has a lot of very high-dollar crops, major farming state. However, the majority of Californians know nothing about farming. So I had an hour-long radio show in California where we talked all the time, every day, about farming. And the point of that was to get information that farmers needed to know from experts in agriculture, but then also to explain things to consumers who vote, who make laws, who can really make life hard for farmers because they don't understand farming. So it's very important that we remember to speak to those people who have no clue about what the farmers are doing or have completely the wrong idea, because you know they don't call California the land of fruits and nuts for nothing. It really earned that title. So, you know, not to put down my home state, but you really have to understand people don't understand everything about farming, so we want to make sure they're getting correct information from you, the experts, the farmers.
This is the third year in a row that Sabrina and Brian have been asked to give a presentation at the Farm Bureau Convention. China and the U.S. are moving ahead with plans to hold a round of higher-level talks to resolve their continuing trade conflict. The negotiations expected January 30th and 31st, according to people briefed on the matter. Those people, however, cautioned that the plan could be delayed by the partial U.S. government shutdown. 3 days of U.S.-Chinese talks aimed at ending the costly trade battle wrapped up on Wednesday this past week in an optimistic atmosphere after President Trump said they were going very well. No details immediately announced. Neither side has given any indication that its basic position has changed. This week's meeting's the start of what some economists say likely to be lengthy negotiations, but at least the two sides are talking. Scott Irwin with the University of Illinois.
The fact that both sides are continuing to engage rather than just being in a stare-off is a positive sign. The way I like to think about it, you can hear the sounds of the ice cracking a bit, but, you know, is it going to thaw completely is what we're trying to figure out right now. I think the fundamentals have changed for both countries in terms of, especially China, their economy has clearly been hurt to some degree by the trade war, looks like probably overall worse than the U.S. economy. So I think that that's probably what is causing the movement right now. But we're asking for some really big changes in the way they operate their economy. So a good dose of skepticism is still in order.
Meanwhile, China's Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs on Tuesday announced the import approval of 5 new U.S. varieties of genetically modified crops. Some speculate that China is perhaps offering a carrot to U.S. negotiators.
I think probably only a few people at the highest levels of the Chinese government know the answer to that question. You know, are they really willing to make a deal that President Trump will accept or not? And so I think that's why I still remain cautious, because I think that the president has put himself in a position where he can't accept just a face-saving agreement with China. He's got to be able to come home and say, you know, after engaging in this level of trade warfare, that it's achieved something real in terms of those big objectives.
In addition to the 5 new varieties, 26 other genetically modified crop varieties were given renewed approvals for importing into China. Farmers who had waited to enroll in the market facilitation program will get a deadline extension once USDA's Farm Service Agency offices are allowed to reopen, that according to Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue on Tuesday. The secretary announcing USDA will extend the January 15th enrollment deadline for payments and add a comparable number of days to set a new deadline when USDA funding is reauthorized. The shutdown puts the secretary in a tight spot, former Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
He knows that there's an opportunity to help commodity groups expand into new markets with the export assistance program that was part of the tariff relief announcement the president made several months ago. He can't do that either. And so it's a frustrating time, and obviously he has no control over what is causing the shutdown. So I'm sure he's very frustrated, and I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to get his full team back on the field.
And it's not just farmers in rural America that have been affected by the shutdown.
No, that's right. I mean, there's a farmer out there that obviously wants to go into the local FSA office to talk about the possibility of a loan or perhaps a program that they want to work with NRCS on. Now, NRCS isn't shut down yet because they've got carryover money, but pretty soon that's going to run out, so the NRCS folks aren't going to be available. So it's very frustrating to people. There may be a young couple in a small town that's interested in closing on a home that will be their first home purchase. They can't do that because the rural development people that are helping with that loan aren't on the job. So it has a rippling effect and certainly impacts rural places in a very serious way because of the reach that USDA has in rural America.
The EPA and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers have postponed a scheduled January 23rd public hearing on the new Waters of the U.S. rule in Kansas City, Kansas, as a result of the partial government shutdown. Speaking of Kansas, Senator Pat Roberts, chair of the Senate Ag Committee, recently announced he will not seek a 5th Senate term in 2020.
I will serve the remainder of this term as your senator, fighting for Kansas in these troubled times. However, I will not be a candidate in 2020 for a 5th Senate term. I have been given a wonderful opportunity and privilege by the people of Kansas through 16 elections in the House, representing the Big First, and 8 elections in the Senate. That's 24 elections. I'm damn proud of that undefeated record. I just think it's time. I think one thing that happens to you is that when you're able to get a historic vote in the Senate, 87 votes for a farm bill, that's unheard of, and have it be bipartisan. And today, that's unheard of. I have a lot of trust and faith in Senator Stabenow and she and me. And those of us on the Ag Committee are very blessed because we have probably the least partisan committee in Washington. So when you achieve something like that, I don't think I can top it. I could sure try, and we will, but I just think it's time.
American Farm Bureau Executive Director Dale Moore worked for Roberts as Legislative Director on the House Ag Committee when Roberts chaired that panel, and also worked in Roberts' personal office.
I'm excited for him. I'm happy for he and his family, and I guess the sad part is just already having to start to think what Washington, D.C. is going to be like without his humor, his presence, and his leadership up on Capitol Hill. He was chairman of the House Agriculture Committee when the 96 Farm Bill was completed, and that was a pretty tough, drawn-out process. And that leadership, I think we saw that on display again here over the past, you know, 3-4 years is what is now the new Farm Bill came together, and you know, that vote that they had in the Senate when it passed out with 86 votes is probably one of the biggest vote margins I've seen on a Farm Bill in my 35 years here in Washington, D.C. And that leadership, that bipartisan, you know, and almost kind of nonpartisan, because you know how agriculture politics is, it's about regions of the country, it's about the commodities, it's about all the different sizes and shapes that our farmers and ranchers, you know, enterprises tune up in. And it's just something that not only, as I mentioned before, not only the folks in Kansas who have long benefited from and certainly have tremendous respect for the work he does on their behalf, but I think farmers and ranchers all across the nation, certainly all of us in American Farm Bureau, appreciate that leadership. And we can only hope that over the next couple of years, he will continue to do all of those things that have made his career such an example for others who will be following in his stead.
The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday rejected hearing separate cases against livestock production standards set in California and Massachusetts. Missouri initiated a case against California's law involving cage standards for egg-laying hens. Massachusetts has a similar law blocking the sale of eggs, pork, and veal in the state based on confinement standards. The Humane Society of the United States applauding that Supreme Court move. Agriculture is concerned. Gary Bays of the OFW law firm.
Well, I think it's going to be disastrous for agriculture in the long run, and the environmental groups behind this issue will turn their attention to other issues. And you take just in the grain area, I think they will eventually say, we don't want GMO grains, corn and soybeans or cotton or what have you. So the consequences are enormous here.
Opponents argue that once the laws go into effect, it would create a significant financial burden for farmers in other states that sell into California and Massachusetts.
You can't sell product, protein product, into Massachusetts after 2022 if it comes from animals that were raised in cruel circumstances. Cruel is defined as a CAFO. Now think about that. Think about hog production there in the Midwest. Think about cattle production, veal production. What we have here in HSUS and PETA is an effort to try to get rid of meat in our society or that kind of protein.
A federal judge in Iowa has thrown out a state law that lawmakers created to try and block undercover activist investigations into the state's livestock industry. The 2012 law, coming after at least a couple of widely publicized investigations into hog operations, made it illegal to go onto a livestock facility under false pretenses or lie on a job application. The law meant to effectively make undercover investigations on livestock farms a criminal offense. A U.S. District Court judge ruled the law was too broad in scope. Reports indicate that ethanol production fell to 1 million barrels, according to weekly data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration, the lowest weekly level of ethanol production since April.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.